Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of the HYM podcast. This week, it's just me and Jake, and I'm in a bit of a foreign location, sat in the van. So, whereabouts are you, Jake?
Well, I'm in the hotel still, near to where we do the sim for Formula E with Mercedes. So I'm still here, loving life. I won't tell you how long or why, but yeah, I'm still here, and you'll probably guess.
Great. Yep.
And whereabouts do you? Because you look like you're tenting.
I'm sat in a petrol station just west of Turin.
Wow, you gone to watch the Giro?
No.
So what are you doing it for then?
No, so we've got some racing coming up. I can tell everyone a bit more about it next week, but yeah, I've got some racing coming up, which is fantastic. We're about 7.5 hours into this journey now, so not too long to go, but yeah,
you've had some stories with the French tolls as well, but we won't go into that one too much.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm the police's best friend, so
yeah. But we're about time we introduce our guest for today. So he's been a teammate of mine last year. He's a Red Bull junior, and he's racing in his second year of FIA F3 this year with Trident. So yeah, here to talk about that all the way from Monaco. On the same weekend as the Formula One is finally back at the Principality, it's Jack Doohan. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
I hear you've got quite a good view looking over the track there.
Quite a decent view, you know, especially for traffic. I can get on the radio, tell the guys what's going on, and see where we need to be, see where we need to place the cars. But I got an awesome spot for the Grand Prix and for the support races, because to be honest, they're probably going to be more exciting, unfortunately, than the GP. But obviously 99% of the 30% capacity spectators that would be coming here do not really care about what happens during the day anyway.
Yeah, you can be like the spotter, like you get an IndyCar.
Exactly.
Which one would you be though, for Max or for Sergio?
I reckon Max would just tell me to fuck.
Yeah.
Tell me to get lost.
You can cancel everyone.
So I'd probably bid for Sergio, to be honest.
Yeah. I've never actually asked the question. You probably don't even know the answer to it, but I reckon you could probably hire out your balcony for quite a lot of money.
I was thinking that, but I wasn't just thinking the balcony, I was thinking the whole apartment. Yeah. I was thinking for next year, it's definitely got to. Yeah. I just need to find a spot, you know, if I have a race weekend on, or because to get, you know, other accommodation outside will probably be just as expensive as what I'd be bringing in.
Yeah.
So if I have a cost-free place to stay for the weekend, you could get, I reckon for the spot, you could get a quite decent income for the weekend or for the week.
Say if you're racing F2 next year or whatever, you could get the team to book you in the hotel around the corner and then just pay for the mortgage for the year for a month or two.
Exactly. No, it would be a good idea, but if I was racing here, I reckon it'd be, especially considering the F2 paddock's so close by, I reckon it would be gold having a place to come back and crash to, you know, that's so close by. So it definitely is in the memory to think for things upcoming. Maybe for the F8.
Yeah, that's a good one. That'd be a good one. Hopefully I'll be racing that.
Exactly.
You've got a place to stay then, Jake.
Yeah, actually, why did I not think about that? Actually, I wouldn't have been allowed because of all the bubble regulations and stuff, but maybe next year, if COVID's not a thing, we could look into that, Jack. But yeah, so you've just come back from the mid-season one. Technically, it's mid-season, but it's only after one race test for F3 at a ref, didn't you? How was that?
Yeah, it was quite decent. Obviously, we don't race at Jerez, so anything, you know, Jerez kind of, you know, towards anything in Jerez is not really relevant, considering it's not going to be in conditions, yes, because it's quite hot, but, you know, anything towards that type of circuit, we're not really going to be, will not be relevant. So, but the perk of it was that it was quite hot and, you know, 25 degrees plus, so that's what we're going to be kind of getting when we head to Paul Ricard. So it was great to get onto the medium compounded tyre and, you know, see how things behave when temperatures are that high again.
Yeah, nevertheless, I mean, I know, like you say, you're not racing there, so it's not as critical, but you topped both sessions on day one, right?
On day one, yeah. You know, quite wasn't obviously the plan. Went in with quite, you know, an open mind to, you know, we could end up 15th, we could end up, you know, 5th. But in the end, we knew regardless of where we ended up that we would have good, you know, a decent pace as a whole, not just as the test. And, yeah, you know, the things that we're trying obviously worked. And somehow, yeah, ended up, not somehow, but, you know, things just come together. And maybe some other people who were testing didn't obviously get exactly what they were looking for. And, yeah, we ended up topping day one. But, you know, in the end, you know how it goes with testing and you've had it firsthand. So, yeah, no, I think it was more important to an aspect for me was race runs, which we focused more on day two. And to be honest, even before going to Barcelona, we did a few race runs and they were quick, but you never really know considering, you know, 5 kg of fuel or even, you know, 4 kg of fuel in a race run situation can change, you know, how the balance of the car and how your pace is. Obviously, you know, a lot. So before going into the races, I was quite skeptical on, okay, you know, I've qualified, you know, the race we're going to qualify second, but, you know, am I actually going to be able to run with the pace? And obviously I was able to, in Barcelona, and then the race pace in Jerez was good as well. So,
yeah. Do you guys find Jerez a good testing track?
I quite like the circuit. It's quite quick. So, yeah, I would love for it to be on the calendar. And for testing, I think for conditions, it's awesome. You know, I can't think of a MotoGP race that I've watched there, or I haven't really watched a Formula One race there. But any event that I've seen there, I've never, you know, seen it raining. So, you know, for consistent conditions and for decent weather, I think it's, although for it being quite far away, I think it's quite a good test track.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I actually really like Jerez to drive. I mean, I feel like I spent half of my career there when I was 2014 to 2016 or something like that. It was Formula Renault or Formula 3 European testing all the time there. But as you say, I think it's a really good track to drive. It's a good track for the current Formula 3 car, I think, as well, with Pirellis as well. I think in the race situation, it would be interesting to see. But yeah, I think it's probably a bit tight for the likes of Formula 1 nowadays. But yeah, if we quickly touch on Barcelona, obviously a good first weekend overall. I know obviously you had an issue, I think, in race one off getting on the line or something like that. So maybe not got all the points you would have liked, but I think probably even for your confidence, qualifying P2, finishing P2 was probably quite encouraging.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously good to finally get a result, you could say, in Formula 3. Yeah, disappointing to end, you know, obviously second. Obviously, I was quite chuffed with second, but considering, you know, I was quickest on both first sets of tyres, and then the third set, you know, a bit of traffic in the last sector, and then you only miss out by 6 thousandths. Can you think about how much?
Is that what it was?
Yeah. So that was a bit, you know, that was obviously, you know, like, I was annoyed because I was like, oh, you know, if I didn't obviously have the car in front, it was warming, you know, I would have pulled it. But then it's like, okay, but you've also P2.
Yeah.
Can't be two. It was a bit, you know, it was mixed emotions. And then, yeah, Saturday was not great off the line. You know, dropped the clutch and didn't move. Slightly crapped myself for a bit. And then so I had to release the right clutch. And then, yeah, so I was outside the top 20. And with this, obviously, the new reverse grid, well, it's the same, obviously, format as we had last, but just now with two races. So ideally, you know, it would have been good to finish 8th or 9th from my 11th grid starting spot, you know, to then focus on race two. But because of that, then most guys starting from, say, who qualified 13th to 20th, all put new tyres because it's their one shot, obviously, for race two to get inside the top 12. So then, as hard as it is to pass around Barcelona, once I, you know, kind of got into, I think, 18th, 17th, then I just didn't have the traction out of the chicane that they did to overtake.
So
17th, and then a bit of luck in race two with, you know, people going off, and then got a couple points for P8. Disappointed with sad day. But yeah, all in all, race two to finish second, quite happy.
Yeah, we touched on it. We had Dan on recently, Tictum from F2. And we touched on the new format with F3 and F2. It seems quite, I mean, obviously from afar, to be honest, before the first F2 race, I didn't do so much research into like what position you needed to be for which race, and you know what, whether it was top 10 or top 12 reversed or whatever. But it seems like it's quite chaotic would be the word I would use. It seems like there's a lot of opportunities for the guys that maybe, like you said, probably around 10th to 16th, 17th in qualifying or whatever.
The thing would have been ace for me last year. would have been awesome.
Yeah.
You're late.
But the actual race, it seems like it does throw a little bit of a curveball into the mix, as you say, with like people using new tyres at different points in the weekend. How do you think, and the fact that obviously you're now having less weekends overall with more races, so how do you think that's kind of people are going to take that? Do you think it's an advantage for you or disadvantage to have less weekends to sort of get into the rhythm?
I think it's an advantage for you know, in one point the seven round, you know, seven less weekends. And also, I don't think it's an advantage or a disadvantage, because in the end, you get more track time when you're actually on track. So there's no real advantage there for a second year driver. And then, you know, you have a disadvantage kind of with the race format as a second, not a disadvantage, but you don't get, you know, anything from it, where, you know, your P10 pace setters to, you know, P15, P16, all of a sudden, you know, they're in the shot to start one, you know, to start race one on pole and also win it, when depending on, you know, because they will usually, if they have that, then they're going to go new, where your guys starting 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, who will be in the top six for the feature race, will not be going new, because, you know, they'll focus, their priorities are different. So then that, you know, gives you that 2-3 tenths a lap that you would mainly lose in some areas, but you get that out of the tire. So yeah, and I think in the end, it's just finishing the races always in the points. And, you know, as well, that's where I was kind of annoyed, because I know that race two, or just my kind of approach to the weekend, I was not being safe, but, you know, from how I saw the Bahrain GP was going to be and how F2 handled it, you know, just making sure I could finish in the points all three races. And so I wasn't, my overtakes would have just been clean, fully around with DRS, or, you know, if it's on the inside and you know, it's a clean move, then okay. So with what happened in race two, I felt like I could have had quite a good shot to be, if I had that good race one, to be in that shot for at least a minimum. I think I would have been an easy podium with what happened, but a win was definitely would have been on the cards, but obviously there was speculation.
Yeah. I mean, obviously if we think about how it would have been last year. If you would have qualified P2, you would have started race one effectively from P2, and you would have finished P2, and then you would have been starting what, P9, I think it was last year. But you know, in the pocket that you've already got that point, those points from the weekend, so you can effectively, the mindset is
you're a bit more relaxed.
I think relaxed, but also you know you can take a bit more risk if you need to. Whereas, you know, if you have you know what ended up happening, and you have now two races that might be a bit compromised or whatever, but then you've got your last race of the weekend, but that's the big points, and you're starting P2. It's like, it's a bit different now, because you know you've got to maximize that, you know. You haven't got another race after that in the weekend. And if you, like say, if you had a poor race one or race two, you can't be probably, if you want to fight for the championship anyway, you can't probably be seen to taking silly risks in that last race. So I think it does alter it a bit. And I guess the other thing is to say that with no F2 on the weekend, the track's a little bit, maybe, is it in a different spot, do you think? I mean, being the main attention as well outside of Formula One is probably quite cool.
No, it hasn't really changed too much, to be honest. You know, because you have, in being in the attention, I don't think, it's just structured, because now obviously, you know, you have the Formula Renault and then we'll have W Series. So I don't feel any difference of being, you know, from when F2 was there. Obviously you are, you know, the only race before the Grand Prix, or, you know, now say that Formula Regional, so you call it, is before you. So you kind of, you're one spot moved up, but, you know, there still is F2, but it's just not on that weekend. So, but touching base on, you know, that, obviously, how you said on, you know, with race three and if you had a a bad race one, race two, like I did. Then it kind of on the start for race three, with ending up going in four wide, you know, I was not going to risk anything, which kind of then put me back to fourth. Because kind of under braking, and Dennis was moving, and Nannini, I don't know, spoke with the one of the stewards for Nannini going into the pit lane off the line to come in, and apparently it's just, you know, race one, or I don't know why they said, you know, they kind of let it go because it was the race start or whatever. But yeah, it kind of then put me into a position where I felt like everyone, all those three, were going at it. So if I didn't back out, there would have been a crash. So
do you guys think, like, that with the new structure of the three race format, do you think there's going to be tactics to try and, like, you know, maybe like if we sacrifice race one, race two a little bit, and to benefit positions for race three? Do you think that will happen?
Yeah, well, there is certainly tactics already. You know, if you qualify top three for race one, you don't want to move forward. Or it's not like you don't want to. If you have the opportunity to, yeah, you know, get some moves, some places forward. But ideally to sit, you know, eighth or ninth and be in a position to set the quickest lap of the race and get, say, four points or three, four, five points. And then race two, you're starting in the top three. Or not top three, but you're starting in the top five. And then you're in a proper shot to, you know, get a podium finish for race two. So then you get a, you know, P2, P3, or ideally P1 for race two. And then you're starting on the front row for race three, where you'll probably be then having your new tyres with your best chance. So that's, you know, a weekend consisting of, you know, 12 with 5, 17 plus 18, you know, a 37-point weekend, which no one got in Barcelona. You know, Barcelona. So that's an ideal weekend. Saying you came, you know, ninth, first, and second, or second and third. So
yeah,
I think it's keeping everything together.
What is the leading points at the moment in the championship?
I think the leading points is 32.
Yeah, I'm just trying to put in my head. I'm trying to think how that differs. You know, one extra race compared to last year, where your sort of championship winning points is like around, I'd say 23 to 25.
Yeah.
Last year.
A weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is bumping it up a little bit, I guess, even with the grid situation.
Yeah. No, you'd think, oh yeah, three races, all right, this is going to boost the championship, you know, big time. But because of the three races and the format, you know, that one of those races for your title contenders or quickest guys in the grid is only going to be 1 point, 2 points.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
All that happens in race two, because if you move forward and you get to P3, then you're only going to be starting, you know, you'll be starting the ninth for race two, where then your top, you know, quick guys will be at the front, so you won't be able to move forward. So it's not as much as you think. And you've got to finish all those races too.
Yeah, I mean, something else, I'm not going to put you on the spot by any means, considering obviously we raced together last year in HSBA, but I am going to be vague enough and say, you know, obviously you seem a little bit more comfortable with the car at Trident this year. You seem happier with it, or at least happier to find the limit of it anyway. What's kind of like, what would you put that down to, do you think?
I think, yeah, the way they... Oh, for me, I just seem to get along with the team better. Atmosphere inside the team. Yeah, seem to just gel, you know, people have their own people and fit in different crowds better. And I just seem to fit in better with the Trident team and work really well together. You know, nice atmosphere. Everyone there, not saying that, you know, HCP didn't, but every single person there wants to win as badly as I do. And their passion to, you know, always be, you know, sim sessions, regardless, karting days and test sessions, you know, everything's just till the right last minute of, all right, we actually, you know, we got to go to bed here, boys, or, you know, we're getting takeaways and things like this. So everything is, you know, to the last fine detail, number one. And yeah, the way I feel, you know, Prema or Trident or HWART, I feel like cars, you know, as you know, set up stiffer, you know, and ART, like you said, was more understeery, or, you know, Prema is known to have heaps of oversteer and more rotation. And for me, yeah, my driving style, as you know, you and me had quite different driving styles. works well with the Trident car, so then I can maximize my potential because the car allows me to.
Yeah.
In places where the HWA car, you know, worked well for you, but I couldn't then maximize my potential in it because I wasn't able to you know, use it where I needed to.
Yeah, I mean, I completely get that. I mean, I've spoke to various people over the years about, you know, how F3 and even F2 now, you know, people might look at it and go, well, you know, a car's a car or setup's a setup, you know, you need to adapt to it. But I don't think any driver will tell you, and you I'm sure you were the same at H3A, and me, I was definitely like this when I was at ART. I never said that, you know, I could not adapt to the car or I could not try and get more from the car. But the problem is, you don't have the track time to sort of experience how to get the most out of that car. You know, if you were doing Formula Renault or European Formula 3 in the past and you had a problem or a feeling that you had with the car that you didn't like, you would have the opportunity to practice and improve it. Whereas with F3 and F2, you have 45 minutes free practice. You don't have the track. The track's in a different condition to where you are in qualifying. Then in qualifying, it's a different time of day, so it's not the same after practice. And you can never really get on top of it, and you're just always kind of doing your best, and you don't have the sensors on the car that you would have in other championships, or definitely what F1 has, to sort of see where the goalposts are, really. So I completely get what you mean, and you often see people just jump in different teams in F3 and F2 and just fly, or do the opposite even, you know, after a good year.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm pretty sure that's the reason. You know, it doesn't mean that a driver just all of a sudden, or one setup is miles better than the other, or a driver just didn't do the job. It's just, it's the nature of the beast, really, I think.
Yeah. And I think, like, an example I use is Barcelona last year. I think in qualifying, we were, you know, split by a few hundredths, ninth and tenth. And then, obviously, you know, things aren't always perfect in the first set, and you need to make an adjustment for the second set. And whereas, you know, we kind of obviously talk to the engineers and they're like, okay, you know, what do you want to change? And, you know, where, say, you knew what to change, I think, you know, you just dropped the rear pressures. But I was like, all right, you know, I think I'm going to, you know, reduce the front wing or whatever. You know, I didn't really know. I reported the balance, but I wasn't able to get, unfortunately, anything back. So I kind of had to make the decision to change, and I just didn't do the right choice, and you ended up qualifying, I think, in the top three, and I went back to 16th. You were in a completely different ballpark, I think, then you're 6 tenths up the road. And it's just little things like that that obviously, you know, some teams can help you with. You know, now I'm able to report balance, and then I don't really have to fill in that gap. But, you know, some teams just work differently like that. Yeah, so that was obviously now I can – obviously with the experience, say, you know, in Barcelona, going for that third set of tires, you know, I could say that I needed, you know, a little bit less front wing. I actually did, because, you know, T3 wasn't flat, the rear was moving, and I, you know, I wanted the high speed a little bit smoother, and I could say, okay, you know, that is actually what I need. It's not the rear, because I have good traction. So and it works. But last year I was still, you know, quite new to it all, and you knew exactly what to do, where I was like, you know, all right, this is the balance. I don't actually know what to change.
Yeah, and you know, a good driver will always admit that they might need to adapt or change the driving style. But the problem, like I say, the problem in this championship, you just don't get the time to sort of improve that and sort of build on something. I mean, there's a few drivers that pop a screen, but come to mind. One being David Beckman, when he was in 2018. 2018, he started with Jensa in the year, and he was sort of between 8th and sort of 12th, I would say, when we had 20, I can't remember how many cars we had, like 21, 22. And he changed the Trident after two races or three races or something like that. And he was like poles, wins for the rest of the year. And he finished third or fourth in the championship, I think, after a really bad start. And then he changed to ART for 2019. And he was nowhere, absolutely nowhere. Couldn't get on with it. I imagine if you had asked him at the time, he would have been saying a lot about what you might have been saying last year, a lot about what I was saying when I had my year with ART in 2018. And then he goes back to Trident last year, and he has a really good year again. And it's not to say that Trident are massively better than ART or the other way around. I think a lot of it is just that if it suits the drive, your natural driving style, so you don't have to adapt and you're not getting all these question marks thrown at you about what you need to do with your driving. You could just build, you know, it's building blocks and you have the confidence and it just snowballs from there, really. So I completely understand why you're sort of feeling naturally straight away more comfortable with the Trident, with the Trident car.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, Vesti, I think, is a prime example as well. You know, he had the most feature race wins last year. All his wins were actually, you know, three wins, three feature race wins, pole in Austria, in the Premier, and he was, you know, quite strong. Three or four DNFs, I think, in the frame of a couple of rounds kind of hurt him big time in the championship. But, you know, he was real strong. And then he's moved to ART for this year. And not saying that he's not strong, but, you know, outlining, he doesn't seem to have that raw pace that he did in the Prema.
Yeah, because he's probably having to adapt a little bit. There's something he doesn't quite like. He's not having the time on track to sort of tell the team where he needs the car because the goalpost is always moving. So I completely understand that. I want to pull it back to how you kind of got into racing. Because we can't obviously not mention your dad and what he achieved in the sport, in two-wheel side of the sport. So I think, you know, a lot of people might be wondering why, you know, how your career started. Did you try motorbikes? If you did, why didn't it work? And why you chose to do karting and cars?
From what I can remember, you know, it was always, from a young age, it was always bikes. And everything with bikes. When I was three, because my dad and Michael Schumacher were quite close, they, you know, lived in neighboring apartments here in Monaco, trained together. So my, you know, when I was three, I think my Christmas present for me and my sister were two go-karts. But before that, you know, as well, even when that kind of came through, it was, you know, the opposite of it as it is now. You know, it was like, all right, I want bikes, even though it's such a young age, but it was just bikes. And, you know, I'd kart a little bit on the side, but we have a track at home, and when I'd kart then, and I'd run out of fuel, and I'd get, you know, if I ran out of fuel on the other side of the circuit when I was three or four, I'd, you know, kind of crap myself and be like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, so I kind of put the kart away a little bit and was riding dirt bikes. And I think on my fifth birthday, I thought it was my fifth birthday, but back at that age, it was whenever dad was home, it was kind of my birthday. So I think it was actually in February.
Yeah.
I broke my leg. Just with a few mates around and kind of got T-boned, and that kind of then I think I was scared, but also dad, you know, was kind of not too keen on it, so he put the bike away and shifted to, you know, pump track BMX.
Yeah.
So like not the trick BMX, but like the do you
Alex,
know what I'm
Alex
talking
Ma-
about?
Alex
yeah
Ma-
like yeah. Like they do at the Olympics.
Like the racing.
Yeah, they just call it BMX racing, don't they?
Yeah, it's a BMX, I think so. So I did that for a couple of years from when I was, you know, after that till I was seven. And then I think, you know, Jake, you might know, like Zane Goddard.
I've heard of that. He did British F3. I swear he did.
I think he did a bit of British F4 and Formula Renault and so on. But he was, another Aussie abroad, not anymore, but... Yeah, he was a mate from school a few years up, and he was started karting, and kind of, you know, we had a track, so he brought it over. And at that age, you know, what your mates are doing, you kind of, you know, you want to be doing. So, and for you guys, it would have been, obviously for you when you were young, it was probably footy, and your mates were playing footy at school. And got back into karting, and it kind of just went from there.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's like we see so often now, like in especially the car side of it, you know, with drivers that have, you know, family surnames that raced in the sport before. I don't think we really ever see someone who with a family member that was quite famous or well known in the car side do the opposite and go to motorbikes. I think that would be quite cool to see. But yeah, how you think it was the crash that kind of set that or stopped that from going anywhere?
I think so. Yeah. Well, especially, you know, at that age compared to now, you know. Now, if you want to go ride a bike or you want to go, you know, drive a car, you go down and drive, and, you know, you get your dirt bike and you go out, or you get your car and you go for a drive. At that age, you're very dictated from your parents. And it's not like, you know, you don't have, you have obviously a say, but it's very, very little. So I guess, you know, kind of with the bike not being in the picture and, you know, then I, because it was my first year of, or not school, I kind of, it was like prep. We have below your first year, so you have prep, year one, year two. And you know, I went into to prep in a wheelchair for my first day. So I think then it was kind of like, all right, let's just try and get school kind of moving here. And then it was kind of mid-year, then I had the, you know, the BMX racing. And your mind just kind of, you know, at that age, it's like, oh, this is the cool thing to do. And I wanted to be, you know, a BMX racer. And yeah, but still, I think after that was Supercross and dirt bikes. Even after the crash, it was still, I remember like a little career day. Then I came in with my boots and, you know, all this heavy kit and a helmet. And so I was still very, you know, in my mind towards that. But I think, yeah, it just kind of, it differed and went a different path.
Yeah. So what do you think the turning point was where it was like, okay, this is, I assume it was karting. So I assume you did karting in Australia. So what was that turning point where you knew that, okay, it's karting from now on, it's four wheels?
I think, you know, it was always, you know, especially, you know, your mates are doing it and they're doing it every weekend. And, you know, I was seven. And so I was always wanting the kart at home, and I wanted to race. Mm. And, you know, my dad actually, you know, said to me that that you weren't allowed to start till you were eight, where you could start when you're seven, but he knew that, you know, once he started, it would, you know, it kind of wasn't going to stop. So he gave himself, you know, one more year of you know, kind of freedom before we got into it. And yeah, from when I was eight, it was just, you know, most weekends. I don't think it was most weekends, because from when I was eight till I was 11, 12, I was still playing rugby as well. So it was still kind of, you know, something to do on the weekends and it's a bit of fun. But yeah, then it started to get real serious, you know, winning the first Australian championship. And then it was, yeah, karting the main priority, or it was always kind of the main priority, but, you know, just full focus towards that.
So do you think that crash, oh, sorry to bring it back to that, but, you know, it's in a way, obviously, like you say, you were very influenced by what your family and friends, and I imagine specifically your dad, would have sort of ushered you into at that age, or what path to follow. And obviously, with the career your dad had, and obviously the injuries he had and crashes he had, it's quite, I don't want to say ironic, but, you know, it's like to see his son in that sort of position that he was so often find himself in and having to deal with. I imagine that probably was the reason why he was a bit worried about putting you on a bike, which seems quite, it's not ironic, it's the wrong word, but you know what I mean?
I completely understand, you know, seeing obviously with his amount of crashes and how he ended up, and then, you know, seeing his five-year-old son, obviously with a broken leg and lying on the ground, he's probably like not getting, what's the word I'm looking for? Not getting.
We're struggling for words here, both of us. Yeah, Alex, save us.
Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to have gone blank.
you know, he's getting flashbacks. I'm just gonna, you know, getting flashbacks from, you know, maybe when he was racing and thinking, oh no, you know, I don't want my five-year-old son to be already, you know, going basically in the position that I was in, and you know, having a breaking bones at such a young age. So I think it was, yeah, really maybe put that to the side. And
yeah,
I think things happen for a reason almost, don't they? Like, it steers you one way or the other, because, you know, Jake, I would have been a professional footballer.
What?
Didn't you know this? Professional?
No.
Right.
Everyone would have been a professional footballer in the UK.
No. But like, I actually would have been.
Well, go on. Well, right. This isn't about you, but go on.
It's a good story, though. So basically, it was end of my first year of racing, so like 2012. Yeah, end of 2012. And I was still playing football on the weekends. And we're from Birmingham, and the best team in Birmingham is Birmingham City.
No, it's not. Don't insult me.
We won't start this now, but
we both are. Yeah,
he's on the wrong side of Birmingham, and I'm on the right side of it. But we'll leave it at that.
So, mate, you're not even Birmingham.
You're Warwickshire. You're not even in. You're not right. This is we're not doing this now. So basically, I'd finished my first year of racing, still playing football at the weekends, and, you know, doing summer camp stuff. And I got invited to, like, it wasn't a tryout, I won't lie, it was like a below like a tryout for the Blues Academy thing. It was like a sesh, like a summer session there or something. Anyway, broke my leg week before, couldn't go, could I?
Oh, you broke it on a bike?
Yep, broke it racing, couldn't go.
So then you didn't do what Jack and Jack's dad would have done, as a sign. You carried on doing it.
No, I carried on doing it. I'm still injuring myself to this day. But
yeah,
there you go. I would have been a professional football player. So things happen for a reason.
That's the point of your story.
Is the moral of the story? Yeah.
Yeah. I would have been a professional footballer as well, but you know.
I think every British person could say that, couldn't they? Yeah, everyone from when they were like 5 till 10 or 5 till 15 had football. Yeah. You know,
at 9 out of 10, I reckon it's got to be close to 9 out of 10 boys and girls, but mostly boys, let's be honest, would have said that they were close to being a professional footballer when they were about 13, 14, 15, 16.
I was just about to be signed. What would you say? Like, I was just about to be signed. So close to be signed. Like, were you one of those kids?
Yeah, so close.
Oh, mate, I was.
I was one scout away from making it, you know.
Yeah. I was until I didn't even have an injury. I can't even blame that.
Yeah, so at least if for me,
I had that fatal ankle roll. You know?
Yeah, exactly. My dad's got that story. He said he was going to be a professional footballer until he broke his ankle. So it's all the same, mate.
Yeah, all the same.
But yeah, let's. So obviously, you did a bit. Just quickly touch. You did some karting, and you won the Australian Championship. You said, I think you said.
Yeah, so I won that in 14, 15, and 16 before moving to Europe.
As you do. 3 years in a row.
I don't think. Well, you didn't do karting, did you? Or you didn't really?
I did. Yeah, I did, but only 3 years of it, and it wasn't at the level most guys in the UK go to.
You were just too good for that. I was.
Yeah, mate. I thought I'd save my energy.
You were one of those blokes that come into the corner. There's a little bit of choke. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a bit of a neck lean with left arm. Yeah, you're actually just right arm. What am I on about?
You were all good points. Saving it for the final.
Oh, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, but I mean, we've had we've had Marcus is Kiwi, but you know, that sort of area of the world, there's quite a few, you know, successful drivers nowadays. So I imagine that was quite a competitive series.
Yeah, no, Australia in the end, they put, in the beginning, it was like quite a mess. They had, you know, quite old engines. You know, everyone was buying, you know, it'd be much of the same, but everyone, you know, had 30 engines.
Yeah.
Each there were these old, like, Yamaha, like, lawnmower engines and the Comas. And
yeah,
it was just all kind of weird. They were, you know, one-off round Australian championships. And I think the cadet categories and the, you know, lower junior categories weren't actually allowed to have Australian championships because, you know, parents were getting punch-ons and that over their sons, so they kind of banned that. But then a few people, you know, took over the board of Karting Australia and put in, you know, a 5-round structure and got some mini rock engines in for the cadet, some IAMIs for the juniors, and some, you know, OK and OKJs for the premier senior and junior classes. So that's when it kind of got some structure in 14, 15, 16. And now it's, yeah, it's real quite competitive, to be honest.
Yeah, it seems.
But still, it was, you know, I think in 2016 I came over to Europe for a couple of races, and, you know, I'd kind of just, you know, won. I think I'd won, you know, the first 2 rounds of the Australian Kart Championship. I came over and entered the Tony Kart in the World Series Karting. I didn't make the final. I think I was running like third last in my heats, and it's just like you go from being, you know, thinking not you're on top of the world, you know, thinking you're the man. And you go there and you just absolutely get flogged.
Yeah.
Like, you are...
Karting nowadays in Europe is just... It's like mini Formula One. The money they spend, the time they spend, you know, on track. The teams themselves are like proper, like, professional outfits using data and, you know...
No, yeah, 2017 with, you know, Ricky Flynn, we were testing, you know, every circuit that we went to. You know, we were usually, because they have, you know, you're not allowed to test 4 weeks in advance. So we were testing for round three after round one, and all round one for round two, and some things like this. But we're testing it every single circuit. You know, Alahama, Finland, which is like three flights away in a 4-hour drive, and doing 2 days there, and then you know, in Sweden, and you know, it's just insane the amount of days that you're doing.
Yeah. And then that was about the time, wasn't it, when you got picked up by Red Bull?
Yeah. So that was, I think it was after the European Championship that in 2017. So I had, you know, a shocking first two rounds, and the last three rounds were decent. I won the last round, I think, came third in the championship. And then the top three, who were Johnny Edgar, Harry Thompson, who's no longer a Red Bull Junior, myself, who kind of got put into the program. But I was already an athlete prior to that.
Yeah. So how was that feeling to sort of like get that call or email, whatever it is nowadays, email?
Well, I think at that or then, and, you know, I was 14, it's not like I was that young, but I didn't really know to an extent, you know, what the junior team was, or what age or, you know, background that kind of was. So it was not only, I think it was kind of only, you know, later that year we went and we were doing, say, you know, physical tests and going into meetings, and kind of the F4 season was starting with a couple of preseason tests, that you start to realize kind of what's at stake and you know, if you do well, you know, what you can kind of go forward and achieve. But obviously, it's quite a difficult program. Well, not difficult. You obviously, you know, you succeed, you do well. It's awesome. If you don't, or if you have a difficult year or so on, you know, then it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, no, I mean, everyone will listen to this will be obviously fully aware of all of that. So, but nevertheless, I mean, it's pretty cool to sort of wear all the colours, but, you know, I guess it kind of depends, like you say, on results. I'd like to think for your benefit that if you have a good year this year, you know, that would be, you know, looking very, very good for your future.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm very grateful and quite lucky to have stayed in the loop for this year after last year, you know, which was shocking. So, yeah, very grateful and, you know, thankful to them for, you know, allowing me to stay in. And then, yeah, I think, you know, got a really good chance this year to make it happen, and, you know, ended round one, I'd say, on a good foot. You know, obviously started well with pole, but so we're seemed to be in a good position to be able to hopefully, you know, fight for the championship. So, you know, it was only a couple of days ago, yesterday and the day before, you know, looking through the stats from last year, and obviously you had a shocker first three rounds, but you scored, you know, your 111, you scored 0.5 of a point in race one, Oval Ring, but from Silverstone onwards, you know, you scored 111 points from your 111.5 tally, which was the most of any driver from that point on, apart
don't
from
remind me.
Better. So I think I've
got still better,
So you were, I was just, you know, seeing your results and seeing, you know, what is kind of required to get that amount of points, and, you know, you stay in that, you know, you were, you know, you had 4th, 10th, 2nd, 7th, 1st, 10th, 5th, 1st, 2nd, 6th. You know, you're on the podium. If you can be on the podium each round and get a win here and there, then, you know, you're on the money.
And it's top fives, mate.
Yeah.
It's top fives. Honestly, I think the most well-known is for not winning the races but being consistent is Esteban Ocon, I think, because I think he won the first race in his year of 2015 in Barcelona. And then he didn't win again for the rest of the year. But he just kept on finishing on the podium. Like, he ended up finishing, I can't remember if he was comfortable in the end or whether it was last race, but it just goes to show that you don't
that have in GP3. To win.
Yeah, when it was GP3, exactly, with ART.
Look at Joan Mir last year in MotoGP.
He only won the last race last weekend.
He might have won one race, but he won before the last round in Portimao, Yeah, qualified. I don't know.
That was it.
He was on the piss for, you know, that whole week because he qualified like 20. He qualified, you know, last and didn't even finish the race. So he must have just been up the wall on everything.
He said they had an electronics issue and they couldn't get like the traction control working. Yeah, yeah.
What, his right hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Ocon had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 consecutive P2s.
Yeah. I mean,
nine in a row.
Yeah. And that is a bit of a special scenario, but it nevertheless just goes to show that race wins are important, but consistency matters more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think even more so with the three races. This year. I mean, if you imagine how, you know, there's 30 drivers, some very good teams, very good drivers in those teams. And then to say that you've got 7 weekends, 3 races a weekend, it's probably only going to be won by tops 10, 15 points, you would have imagined.
Yeah.
And you can imagine that a lot of that will come into, if you look back at the end of this year, how everyone did in that third or the second race effectively now. You know, the qualifying rate for the feature race effectively is where you qualify. It's what we've always had. And the reverse grid from race one is in a way, you know, different now that it comes from your qualifying as well. But that race two, I think, is going to be where people make the difference.
No, definitely.
So how is the kind of, I mean, it's almost semi no point asking you this because there's no point for you to focus on it unless you, apart from doing F3 this year. But, you know, I imagine your future goals are pretty much, you know, F2, F1, you know, F1 being the goal, I absolutely assume.
Yeah, obviously. But, you know, we all know how hard and difficult and how many things have to be aligned for that to happen. But, yeah, if I can have a good season this year, well, I have to have a good season this year. So,
yeah,
you know, presuming I do. And then going forward to Formula 2. And then, you know, hopefully if I can then have a good season and then get back in good shapes, you know, properly with Red Bull, then, you know, then I could be in a good position. But yeah, other than that, it's, you know, it's very dependent on the time and, you know, seats available. And, you know, a prime example is, you know, Alex Lynn,
who
got brought on, you know, he sent an email to Helmut Marko saying, if I win Macau or you sign me, and you're on Macau and you got signed, wins GP3. But, and then, you know, obviously Sainz, I think, just won V8 3.5 and Gasly was doing something and they just didn't have a spot for him. That's just unfortunately how it rolls sometimes. And so, you know, things, you have to have a bit of luck. You have to have things, you know, a lot of things aligned. So obviously, you know, realizing that and taking all that into consideration, but nevertheless, you know, as long as I do the job on track and can be putting in results, then that's all I can do.
You've said a couple of times, like, it's important to have a good year this year. Do you like the pressure of knowing you've got to have a good year?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not like you love the pressure. It's, I think, you know, just dealing with it in the correct way and trying to really be relaxed and not, you know, let that pressure, you know, cause anything. I think obviously having the pressure goes away slightly when you have a bit of confidence in your package, knowing that you can, you know, a bad result or, you know, I think, you know, Barcelona free practice was terrible, right? You know, the balance was out the window and things were really off, but I was eighth, you know, where I feel like, you know, last year for a number of reasons, you know, for things to be perfect would be, you know, for the package and not being able to adapt the car, you know, I'd be 10th, 11th and, you know, maybe squeezing into the top 9 and out of the window, you'd be bottom half of the top 20, you know, or early 20s. So knowing that obviously gives you confidence as well, knowing that, all right, you know, even if the thing's completely out of the window, you know, we'll be 8th.
I think that is such a confidence boost when your bad days were good days last year.
Yeah.
Like, I always loved that. Like, knowing that, like, oh, I'm having a bad day here. Crap day. Okay, P10. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
Well, that's what makes a championship, or how I would use it, a championship assault. But I think I've never been a part of an F1 program, but honestly, I've always thought that it can only be for you to do the job. You've got that's sort of nothing. Path.
You know, Jay, you're going to...
You win F3.
Jay, you're going to have to repeat that.
Am I...
Oh, you're lagging big time.
You're lagging. 1 minute. Let me make a note.
Should
time.
I say? Should I say, bro?
Yeah. One second.
I've made a note for the time, Jake, so I can edit it.
Have you?
Oh, Jack, you can hear me, all right? Can't you?
Yeah, you kind of just glitched there for one second.
Thank God it's not me. No, he's trying something.
Hang on, am I back now? I think I'll be back.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, I'm on my personal hotspot now. Sorry, about 3 or 4 times a day, the Wi-Fi in this hotel just drops out.
Is it dropped out?
I can hear you, but you're not moving. You're kind of... Yeah, oh, now you're back. Oh, better. You're glitching, you're lagging.
Has it dropped out while you're playing Ultimate Team yet?
Yeah, it has twice. I was losing 7-0.
Yeah, the connection dropped out then. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Shall I just start that again?
You can just say what you were saying.
Yeah.
Wait, actually, yeah, I mean, just, one minute. Because then I can see it when I'm editing.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's how you obviously build a championship. Sort of when those what you think are bad days are actually, you know, good days, effectively. But I've never been a part of an F1 program, junior program myself. But I've always assumed that it would just only be positive pressure. Or I feel like it's different when you're in it, I know. But I feel like I would only take it as positive pressure because you win the shirt in F3. You know, you're going to get the support of Red Bull, you know, basically. I know what we just said with Alex, Lynn, but it's a very extreme case. You know, if you win, you are going to get your chance. If you don't win... Yeah, maybe there's an issue with Red Bull, but if you're not with an F1 program and you don't win, you're not going anywhere anyway. So it doesn't really, like, you know, I think what we all want, I've always thought any driver would want is just the chance, you know, that if you prove yourself and you do the job, that you get rewarded for it. And that's what we all ask for. So I know Red Bull are harsh, but, you know, you do the job, you do the job at the end of the day. I think that's all you have to be thinking about.
Definitely.
But yeah, let's quickly, just before we sort of start to wrap up, I want to talk to you, obviously being a Red Bull junior, about the F1 title fight this year. So we're jumping on that bandwagon because anything F1 gets viewed nowadays. But yeah, how do you see it going? Obviously, it seems like Mercedes have edged it so far.
Jay would say that as he helps Mercedes. So
I do. I can't say anything about it.
Should we put like a disclaimer before the start of this? Like, oh, Jack's a Red Bull athlete, and Jake works for Mercedes. So who do you think they're going to choose?
Yeah, I think, you know, Mercedes are playing the game. They've always had the game. They've always had the upper hand on not the upper hand, but they're not as bad as they're saying they are. Obviously, you know, Red Bull are bringing a good solid fight, but, you know, Lewis is showing his true colors and you know what he really who he really is and how he's and why he is where he is and why he's achieved what he has. So yeah, I think, you know, if he can go that extra bit if he needs to, but I don't feel like he has to as such as yet. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in these difficult situations that he's been faced with in the previous rounds, you know, he's, you know, overcame them and showed why he is, you know, the all-time, you could say, on statistics, the all-time greatest. He's doing an exceptional job at the moment. You know, Red Bull are bringing a really good fight and seem to be, you know, the strongest they've been in a few years. So, you know, I'm hoping that Max and also Sergio and Sergio can equal with Max and get there, and so he can, you know, play a good role in the strategy, you know, and then hopefully Max can push for race wins and make make Mercedes work hard. Not that they don't work hard, nothing against you, Jake, and your endless amount of days that you probably do for them.
All me, mate.
But yeah, and you know, kind of, and get something good to watch. Not that it's not good to watch, but you know, have something to look forward to this, you know, kind of thing that they're trying to put on now. The whole, you know, round five, Max.
Yeah. First.
This is Lewis's best start to the season, isn't it?
Ever. Yeah,
it's both of theirs, I think. Mm-hmm. Points wise, I think it's both Max's and Lewis's best start. I think the point you made about Sergio is the sort of what I kind of take away from it at the moment, because I think Lewis, Max, Mercedes, Red Bull, I think it's very even between the cars and the drivers, actually. Maybe Lewis tiny bit more rounded at the moment, but it's that second seat in each team that seems to make the difference, I think, because if you look at the Spanish Grand Prix, if you have Sergio sitting in Lewis's pit window for that second pit stop, Max wins the race.
Yeah, because Sergio would have been a lot more difficult to overtake. That would have given Max 3-4 more laps, you know, plus probably 4 or 5 seconds, and then he would have been laughing. So it's that's making it a little bit more difficult, but let's just hope that Sergio can get to the grips of this, you know, as they talk of extremely oversteery rotation car balance that they seem to all say there is, and which I'm sure he can, hopefully. Or try and adapt it towards him, because you know, it has seemed quite difficult for any driver who's kind of hopped in that seat. So maybe they've got to try and, you know, change it towards the driver and give him a bit more of a helping hand. Not saying that they're not doing that already, but
I'd love that.
Wait, can you give me guys 1 minute, 1 second?
Yeah.
Well, then let me just make it. Do you want me to wrap up, or do you want to wrap up?
I've literally just sent you a message.
Okay. You can wrap up, because you've never done it.
No, you do. Because I don't know what... on the spot like that, I'll mess it up.
I think just do a quick one on, like... So what's your prediction for the championship win? I think we'll just do a quick championship win.
Can you go ahead a little bit?
That'll do it. That's fine, mate.
Yeah, I'll do that.
All right, that's cool. Do you want to make your finger clicking noise? That's the proper weird one. I don't understand that.
What do you mean? You don't understand how to do that?
No, I understand it. It's just like I would never have assumed that would help you edit a video. But I guess
basically, it doesn't come out in the sound graphs.
Yeah, you see the spikes, and then it's like, oh, it's there.
Yeah.
I mean, you just did it twice, so.
Oh no.
I think that's definitely the main thing with the fight at the moment between the two teams and the two drivers. But so if you could choose, I know you're probably going to be a bit biased, but if you could choose, just who do you think is going to win the championship? Just a short answer, and then we'll sort of leave it there to win the who's going to win the championship this year in F1.
You know, feeling, opinion. Obviously, who I want, you know, I want Red Bull to win. I'd love Max to win. Love to see the AlphaTauris obviously into the top 10. I think Gasly has got a good shot of, you know, being in that P6 as well, P5 even as possible. Being in the mix with the Ferraris, but their paces seem to get better. But based on statistics, which is what it comes down to and what's on paper, at the minute. You know, Lewis has got the upper hand, not in package, but he's doing the better job. So at the moment, you would say, looking at the moment, who's to win the title, you'd say, four rounds in or whatever we are, five rounds in, Lewis has had the best start of the season that he's ever had. He seems to be on form. But then you could also say, okay, Red Bull get their strategy right. Not saying that they haven't, but maybe having that second car a bit further up and being able to help out with things, then Max can be a serious threat too. So, not gonna pinpoint.
Oh, he's gonna sit on
sat on the fence fully there, mate. I love it. I think it'll come down to a DNF or something like that.
Could be a 2016 remake, Rosberg, Hamilton.
I think I think also the role of the second driver is going to play a big part this year.
Yeah, definitely. You can see there's a bit of a bit going on between, you know, Max's over, you know, T1 overtake for Lewis in Imola, and then, you know, Lewis kind of running Max out of road in Portimao T3, I think it is. And then Max, again, he's kind of, you know, quite a big lunge into T1 in Barcelona. So there seems to be, you know, a bit of fire there. So hopefully that can turn into something good.
Yeah.
No, well, Jack, thanks for your time today. It was a real short notice one, everyone, and Jack's pulled through. So we really, really appreciate that. And we also really appreciate everyone for listening, you know, the support over the last, what will this be, episode 14, 15 when it goes out, Jake?
Yeah, exactly. Just over two months.
It's been mega. So we're going to keep these coming to you. And if you want to check out any of Jack's stuff, follow him at Jack Duran on Instagram, and make sure you leave a like, comment, rating, everything on the podcast. And if you've got any questions, tweet us, Instagram, anything, and we'll try and fulfill what you want. Maybe even an episode with Callum Islet. We see that one a lot, Jake. So
yeah, you never know. Yeah, keeps cropping up.
Yeah, so we'll see what we can do. But anyway, guys, thanks, and we'll see you soon.
Cheers. Thank you.